Welcome to the AM Jackson Podcast with your host, Mark Daly. News, sports, and conversations that are important to Jackson County. This is the AM Jackson Podcast.
Local Jackson news now from the WKHM.com News Center.
Good morning. 5 minutes after the top of the hour. Reporting with WKHM News, I'm Mark Daly. Michigan State Police say a 50-year-old Pleasant Lake man is in custody following a shooting during a domestic incident Sunday in Rives Township. Troopers were called to a home for reports of shots fired. Investigators say the suspect arrived at the residence, threatened people inside, then pulled out a handgun and fired several shots at the home's occupants before leaving the scene. No injuries were reported. Police later located the suspect and arrested him without incident. He was lodged at the Jackson County Jail and is expected to face attempted murder and domestic violence charges. The investigation remains ongoing. Defense expert testified yesterday in Jackson County Circuit Court that a seven-month-old Jackson girl did not die from blunt force trauma, challenging the prosecutor's case against 26-year-old Jake Cooper. Cooper is charged with open murder and first-degree child abuse in the 2023 death of his daughter, Imani. Forensic pathologist Dr. Jubisa Dragovich testified medical records showed the child died from necrotizing enterocolitis, a condition where the intestines lose blood supply and begin to deteriorate, possibly caused by a bowel obstruction. He told jurors there was no evidence of damage to nearby organs that would typically be seen in a blunt force injury. Prosecutors maintained the child died from abuse, citing internal injuries and healing rib fractures discovered during the autopsy. The prosecution rested its case Monday. Closing arguments and jury deliberations are expected today. Consumers Energy crews are continuing restoration efforts this morning after severe weather moved across Michigan Monday afternoon, bringing strong winds, heavy rain, and widespread outages. About 50,000 customers lost power statewide. Utility says about 200 crews worked overnight to restore services, with another 140 crews on standby ahead of more possible storms today. Damage assessments continue, including downed power lines, broken poles, fallen trees. Consumers Energy is reminding residents to stay at least 25 feet away from downed lines and never use generators inside garages or enclosed spaces because of carbon monoxide dangers. Customers can track outages and restoration updates through the Consumers Energy Outage Center. National Weather Service meteorologist T.J. Turnage says there were several reports of damage on the west side of the state.
We've had a lot of reports of power lines down, trees and branches down. There's been extensive power outages across the area, and that lines up with a lot of the reports we've gotten of weather stations that have reported gusts of 50 to 60, and some gusts have even been 70 miles an hour or more.
Turnage predicts the weather that we're going to see today may not be as bad as yesterday.
Probably in terms of coverage, it won't be quite as much, and be a little surprised to see wind speeds as high as what we experienced. So overall, probably a little less widespread coverage and a little lower intensity.
And again, the high winds knocked down trees, power lines. Some planes were reportedly damaged and flipped over at Lansing's Capital City Airport. City of Jackson residents could be deciding in November whether or not the position of city treasurer remains an elected position or becomes an appointed one after 2028. Jackson City Council is scheduled to vote today whether or not to adopt a resolution approving a proposed charter amendment to put on the November ballot to make the office of city treasurer a city council appointed position as opposed to an elected one. That would also include submitting proposed ballot language to the Office of Attorney General and to the governor. City officials say if the proposed charter amendment is rejected at the November election, the amendment shall not be resubmitted for a period of 2 years. The current term for the city treasurer expires on December 1st of 2028. Right now, the job is held by interim treasurer Nanette Mutton, who was appointed by city council following the passing of Martin Griffin. The position is up for special election in November with Mutton as a candidate, David Hammontree also running for the spot. Jackson County could be applying for a grant from MSHDA's Community Development Block Grant Program. The total amount for the grant that the county would be applying for would be $487,804. $400,000 worth of the grant would go to home repairs for low to moderate income qualified homeowners in Jackson County. Remaining funds would be allocated for administrative and program related costs. The Jackson County Board of Commissioners are scheduled to vote on the matter at their meeting on Tuesday. The grant permits residents in the income threshold to apply for grants ranging from $10,000 to $40,000. The motion would also come with the approval for a public hearing to take place at the next Board of Commissioners study session happening on June 2nd. The county had previously applied for the CDBG grant application in September of last year. However, the final application was not approved. The final application is due by August 6th. There is no match required from Jackson County, as all funds utilized for this program would come from MSHDA. City of Jackson's Community Police Oversight Commission is making an effort to welcome more residents to their bi-monthly meetings, in part by holding their meetings within local wards rather than just at City Hall. Commission Chair David Hammontree said that the move has resulted in an increase with attendance.
Yeah, we have people here. That's new. We're usually used to talking to chairs. Occasionally we'll have one or two people. But since we started traveling to all the wards this year, we've had pretty good turnout. What would you say, about 15 to 20 people here tonight? That's an improvement from one or two. And so we can hope that we're just as successful the next time, which is when we meet again in July 9th. And Ward 4, the Calvary United Methodist Church. That's 925 Backus Street.
Hammontree describes the commission as review-oriented, with one of their focuses being to go over complaints that are filed against the Jackson Police Department with their staff, saying those sessions gave him a better understanding of how those are handled.
The best impression I get is understanding the procedures in-house. If there's an issue with an officer, that gets addressed, and just like any other workplace. And a corrective action that takes place. And I also appreciate the candid conversations we can have both with the chief and the deputy chief during these reviews.
Their meeting last week included an update from Jackson Police Department Chief Christopher Simpson, in which he said there are now multiple persons of interest in regard to the investigation of the May 9th shooting on Biddle Street. David said the commission is more than happy to hear and address concerns from residents.
By attending, you can at least learn what we talk about and what we do. And if you're uncomfortable speaking for 3 minutes, I understand. It's not my forte either, but you can at least talk to us after the meeting. If there's something that you want on our radar, we'll listen and we'll try to get it on our agenda and engage the chief and other leadership to see what we can possibly explore.
Their remaining meetings for 2026 are scheduled for July 9th, September 10th, and November 12th. Jackson County Sheriff's Office is inviting families to its annual open house and fun fest that'll be happening on Sunday, June 7th. The free event runs from noon till 4 outside the sheriff's office in the courthouse parking lot on Wesley Street. According to a flyer posted on the department's social media page, visitors will have a chance to meet deputies, canine officers, mounted police officers and horses, and members of the SWAT team. The event will also feature inflatable games, a bounce house, face painting, and foot races with deputies. Free hot dogs, ice cream sandwiches, and water will be available while supplies last. Massive civil rights lawsuit filed regarding alleged abuse at the Wayne County Juvenile Detention Facility. Tim Pamplin has this story.
This was our client being sexually assaulted by somebody who they knew was treating these children inappropriately.
That's attorney Joe Siglerick with the Bernstein Law Firm. The lawsuit claims chronic overcrowding, expired medications, physical and sexual abuse of minors by staff. The list goes on.
There are dog kennels that treat their dogs better than these kids were treated.
That's attorney Mark Bernstein. He said his client was abused inside, and in fact, last year, a worker was found guilty and sentenced up to 15 years behind bars for the sexual and physical abuse of then 14-year-old Rashad Calhoun, now named as a plaintiff in this multi-million-dollar civil rights lawsuit. Now, we did reach out to the Wayne County Executive's Office. They replied that they have yet to be served in this case. Tim Pamplin for the Michigan News Network.
Settlement has been reached between Michigan and the Monsanto company. Attorney General Dana Nessel announced the agricultural biotech company will pay a minimum of $108 million and up to $240 million to address harms from PCB contamination. The money will be tied to the outcome of related legal actions. Child has been reunited with their family after being found wandering in Southgate wearing only a diaper on Monday. A passerby safely rescued the child in her vehicle and waited for police to arrive. Southgate police searched for the parents while the child was being cared for at the Southgate Police Department. Child Protective Services was also notified and assisted with the investigation. UP man was arrested for aggravated possession of child pornography. 41-year-old George Hilty of Wakefield was arrested following an investigation by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children after allegedly sharing illicit content on the Internet. The Michigan State Police Computer Crimes Unit encourages parents to speak to their children and family members about safe use of the Internet. There was a lot of back and forth at Monday night's Ann Arbor City Council meeting over whether or not the University of Michigan should move ahead with a planned purchase of 140 acres of the now defunct Concordia University. The city would prefer the new owner turn it into a tax-generated property, and they're interested in seeing the land used to address community needs. City Council voted unanimously Monday night to approve a resolution urging U of M to not acquire the shuttered campus. The deal for U of M to make the $60 million purchase is expected to be approved at this week's Board of Regents meeting. University has not said what the property might be used for. While consumers' prices continue to rise, so too do corporate profits. Ancora Managing Director David Sowerby says things are going very well for those running big corporations.
So far, very good for corporate profits. For the completed first quarter, profits are up 18% compared to year-ago levels. For all of calendar year 2026, they're expected to grow more than 20%. That's been one of the key factors keeping the market going higher.
Sowerby says investors are looking back on Jerome Powell's tenure as chair of the Federal Reserve. He says the gains made during his term were some of the best on record. Former state representative will be honored today across the state. Ryan Recker has this story.
Governor Gretchen Whitmer ordering U.S. and Michigan flags to be at half-staff today to honor and remember former state representative Paul Clemente. He was raised in Downriver, Detroit, where he graduated from Cabrini High School in 1981 and stayed active as an alumni in supporting small businesses. He passed away in April. The flag lowering will coincide with his birth date, and the flag should be returned to full staff on Wednesday. Ryan Recker for the Michigan News Network.
West Michigan state representative is doing better after collapsing over the weekend.
Reports vary, but it appears State Representative Joe Fox collapsed at the Sparta Town and Country Days parade on Saturday morning. One of the people to rush to his side was Tom Norton. That's a political opponent of his running for State Senate in District 33 as a Republican. People called 911 saying that Fox wasn't breathing. EMS was on the scene. They transported him to the hospital, where later accounts say he fainted. One of Fox's supporters posted on social media thanking his opponent Tom Norton for the help, and that his actions remind us that we're all neighbors first, and this is the spirit we need more of in public life. Ryan Recker for the Michigan News Network.
State health officials say contact with baby chicks and ducklings is driving a new salmonella outbreak. Tony Ortiz has this story.
21 cases have been reported so far in Michigan, and that mirrors a larger outbreak spanning a total of 31 states. Health experts warn that the birds can carry the bacteria without appearing sick. They are urging residents to always keep live poultry outside, to never snuggle or kiss with the birds, and immediately wash your hands with soap and water after handling them or their cages.
Car makers' return to office plans are getting a boost from an unexpected place.
That boost is in the annual study of carmaker-supplier relations. Study author Angela Johnson of Plant Moran says every carmaker improved. One reason is suppliers found that their contacts at the car companies were back in the office.
Buyers perceived that as better accessibility. Buyer knowledge improved. Their ability to solve problems went up. All those things worked together, and the scores went up.
Ford was the most improved, GM the top domestic company, Toyota had the best overall relationship with suppliers. Jeff Gilbert for the Michigan News Network.
Lawrence Tech hosts RoboFest World Championship, crowning winners from around the globe, the annual event, and more than 700 students representing more than 200 teams from more than 20 countries for 3 days of events. High school teams competed for scholarships to the university worth up to $80,000 over 4 years. Teams from Ghana, China, and Hong Kong won competitions, along with Team Error 404 from Bloomfield Hills. Next year's competition will be held in Seoul, South Korea. Two men from Michigan continue to raise money by riding their bikes. It's taken them to Cooperstown, Pebble Beach, Washington, D.C., a mountain, and more. Jeremy Otto has the story.
Yes, two Metro Detroiters, Mike DiLorenzo and Thomas Henry, have been doing this for years in support of ALS of Michigan after Mike's father-in-law passed away from the degenerative disease in 2019. Throughout their treks across the country, they've been spreading his father-in-law's ashes, marking the 20 places he said he wanted to go before he passed. The Grand Canyon, the final check mark. Thomas talked about how they prepped for it.
The training part was many years ago when we started doing these long century rides. And over the course of the last decade, your body becomes habituated to that. There's not a lot of training. It's more mental. More than anything, Mike and I have discovered over the journey, you get stronger each day. So you really can't build up to it. You built into it.
You can follow their 10-day, 900-mile journey on social media by searching Pedal for ALS. That's Pedal with the letter 4, ALS. There you can find out how to donate as well. Jeremy Otto, Michigan News Network.
It's Tuesday, and it's the 19th day of May, and today we celebrate your elected officials day. It's Malcolm X Day, National May Ray Day, National Hepatitis Testing Day, and National Devil's Food Cake Day. It's on this date in 1857. The electric fire alarm system was patented by William F. Channing and Moses G. Farmer. It was on this date in 1926. Thomas Edison spoke on the radio for the first time. On this date in 1935, the National Football League adopted an annual college draft to begin in 1936. It was on this date in 1962, Marilyn Monroe made her last significant public appearance, singing happy birthday to President Kennedy at a party for him at Madison Square Garden in New York City. It was on this date in 1992, Billy Ray Cyrus, he released his debut album, Some Gave All. It was on this date in 1994, Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis passed away in New York at the age of 64. On this date in 1999, Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, was released in the U.S. It was on this date in 2006, The Da Vinci Code opened in theaters. On this date in 2012, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg married Priscilla Chan. On this date in 2016, Egypt Air Flight MS-804 went missing over the Mediterranean Sea while en route to Paris to Cairo. Meghan Markle married Prince Henry at a ceremony in Windsor Castle, St. George's Chapel. That was on this date in 2018, and it was on this date in 2021. The EU agreed to open its borders to vaccinated travelers from certain countries. Birthdays today include Brooke Wexler is 33, actress from Richie Rich, Eric Lloyd, 40, Santa Claus, Jason Gray Stafford is 56, actor from Monk. Stephen Ford is 70, actor from Starship Troopers, son of President Gerald Ford. Grace Jones. Well, there's somebody I haven't thought of in a while. Grace Jones, 78, actress, model, singer. You may remember her from Conan the Destroyer or A View to a Kill. David Hartman is 91, former Good Morning America host. Malcolm X would have had a birthday today. Malcolm X died in 1965. Nora Ephron would have had a birthday today. The writer-director from When Harry Met Sally, You've Got Mail. She passed away in 2012. Peter Mayhew would have had a birthday today. He played Chewbacca in Star Wars. He passed away in 2019.
And Andre the Giant would have had a birthday today. Andre the Giant passed away in 1993. Other birthdays today include Sam Smith, 34, singer, Stay With Me, Unholy. Marshmello is a DJ and producer. Marshmello is 34 today. Jenny Berggren, singer from Ace of Base, 54 today. Phil Rudd, the drummer for AC/DC, is 72 today. Pete Townsend from The Who is 81. Joey Ramone would have had a birthday today, passed away in 2001, singer of the Ramones, and Dusty Hill, bassist, keyboards, singer for ZZ Top, passed away in 2021. For more local stories, breaking news, and interviews with Jackson's newsmakers, visit us online at WKHM.com. I'm Mark Daly.
Mark Daly, and you're listening to the AM Jackson podcast.
All right, it was another day, another loss for the Tigers. We'll eventually make our way to the Tigers, but let's actually talk about some good sports for a second, if you don't mind. Oh yeah, I said it. Well, when you're 11, when you're 2-11 in your last 13 games, things are not going well. Let's go to the NBA, where yesterday it was an overtime, and the Spurs took down the Thunder 122-115. Exciting night in the NBA and NHL. It was actually a double overtime game in Game 1 of the NBA Western Conference Finals. Again, that final 122-115. Today, you've got the Cavs at the Knicks. That is an 8 o'clock first tip in the Eastern Conference Finals. So these two teams will kind of go back and forth for the next few days until we figure out who's going to win the conference championships, and then we'll finally get to the NBA Finals. On to the NHL yesterday. Montreal Canadiens got a 3-2 win in overtime in Game 7 to advance the Eastern Conference Finals yesterday. So exciting. 3-2 final right there. Nothing on the ice today, but tomorrow the Golden Knights will take on the Avs, and then Thursday the Canadiens will face the Hurricanes in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Now on to the Detroit Baseball Tigers. Ugh, it was another game where Tigers got on the board first, but then decided to kind of lay down a little bit. You know what? Let's get you that run that scored. Here's Riley Green with an RBI double.
Riley Green, fly ball, right center. That's deep. That's well hitting off the wall, base of the wall. Wind might have knocked it down. Rounding third, heading home is Dingler. Third of the play, not in time. Riley Green with a two-out RBI double. Tigers take a 1-0 lead.
That was the first run. Vierling would get a dinger in the eighth, but then that's it. That's it for the Tigers. With the rest of the game and the recap, here's Dan Dickerson.
Hi, this is Dan Dickerson. The Cleveland Guardians come into Detroit and take game one of a four-game series from the Tigers with an 8-2 win. This story is all about Slade Ciccone. He's had a very rough year, but he had two good starts against the Tigers last year, and he had another good start against the Tigers this year. Tigers offense struggling. It looked like an opportunity against a very hittable pitcher, but the Tigers, after scoring a run in the first inning, were shut down the rest of the way by Slade Ciccone until the eighth inning. And after taking the 1-0 lead, Framber Valdez really labored in this game. He gave up two runs in the third inning, two runs in the fifth inning. It was singles, it was doubles, but he also was walking batters in this game. Four walks in five innings, four runs on five hits. Framber Valdez takes the loss, his third of the year. His ERA now climbs to 4.58 with the loss. Jose Ramirez had a big night for the Guardians. Two-run double in the sixth inning. Scored a couple of runs and made it a 6-1 game. He had a home run the ninth inning for good measure. He finishes the night 3-for-4, the Tiger Killer, with three RBIs plus a walk. Tigers' last run of the game scoring on a Matt Vierling home run, his fourth of the year. But the Guardians now improved to 27-22. The Tigers are falling ever farther below the 500 mark. They're 20-28. And now get ready to try to even up this series at a game apiece on Tuesday night. Kader Montero on the mound for the Tigers. Parker Messick, who takes a 2.35 ERA into the game, will go for Cleveland. The 6:40 starter on the air at 6:15 on the Detroit Tigers Radio Network.
And rest of the MLB from yesterday. Marlins dominating the Braves. 12-0 for that final there. The Rays all over the BOs. 16-6. It was the Reds topping the Phillies. Phillies topping the Reds 5-4 for that final. The New York Baseball Metropolitans got a win over the Natties 16-7. Stankies over the Blue Jays 7-6. Red Sox beating the Royals 3-1. Twins over the Astros 6-3. Brewers topping the Cubbies 9-3. Rockies over the Rangers 7-6. The Angels getting a win on top of the Athletics 2-1. Mariners beating the White Sox 6-1. Padres shutting out the Dodgers 1-0. The Diamondbacks all over the Giants 12-2 for that final yesterday. So we take a look at the standings. Yes, Dickerson told us 8 games below 500 for the Tigers. They're on par with the Royals right now, both of them are 20-28 in the basement of the American League. Now, really, with as bad as the Tigers have been, They trail the Twins by 2 games. They trail the White Sox by, 2.5 games. Three and a half games. And they're six. They're only 6.5 behind the Guardians. So as bad as the Tigers are doing, if they could just put together a few wins, they're back in it. I know it's way too early in the season, but they just got to hang close for when they get everybody back from injuries. And then that thing we're all hanging our hat on right now is that late season run for the Tigers. Hey, it could happen. Tigers are at the Cleveland Guardians minus 126 today, according to the experts who put together the sports books. Guardians are 12-12 on the road. Tigers are 13-9 at home. Matchup predictor has Cleveland at 59.1%. Parker Messick has that ERA of 2.35. Kider Montero of 3.65. Detroit Tiger baseball. Down the hall to the left. Fox Sports 101.9 FM. That is a 6:15 broadcast. Same thing for tomorrow, 12:45. They wrap up the series on Thursday. And Friday, Tigers start a 3-game series with the BOs. High school softball yesterday, Pinckney all over Jay-High, 26-4 for that final from yesterday. Today in baseball, again, with the weather rolling through, phone first. Follow the different teams on socials. Baseball, you've got Addison at Hanover Horton. That's at 4 o'clock. Concord at Quincy at 4:15. Northwest hosting Penfield at 4. Springport hosting Stockbridge at 4:15. Harper Creek hosts Western at 4. In softball, Vandy plays host to Dansville. Quincy will host Concord. Northwest hosts Penfield. Springport will host Stockbridge. Western on the road at Harper Creek. Again, 4 o'clock, 4:15 kind of range first pitch times the rest of the way there. Boys golf, Western captured the team title Monday at the Western Invitational at Arbor Hills, finishing with a score of 302. Marshall second. Northwest placed fourth at 329. Springport finished fifth at 334, and Concord 415. Western's Bentley Kuhn earned medalist honors with a 4 under par 68. Andrew Bolt finished second with a 71. Northwest Cody Rowe, fifth, with a 78. SCA Finals, St. Philip Jackson Christian came up just short of the conference championship, finishing 2 strokes behind Hillsdale Academy, 339 to 341. Aiden Ernst led Jackson Christian with 81 points. It was a rained-shortened top 50 junior golf tournament. Lumen Christie's Gabe Cooper, 5 under par through 17 holes before play was stopped. Today in boys golf, Big 8 Conference at Arbor Hills, Cascades Final at Sharp Park, and SEC at Saline today. On to soccer from yesterday. Again, any of those that are happening today, phone first, but yesterday it's kind of hit and miss. You had Jackson Christian topping Springport 5-3 yesterday, Dansville over Stockbridge 9-1. In the Cascades, it was Lenawee Christian defeating Grass Lake 3-0, and Manchester topping Napoleon 3-0 yesterday in girls soccer. In the I-8, Marshall at Harper Creek kicked it around for a 1-1 tie. Adrian at Western. Adrian gets the 2-1 win there. And in the white, it was Jackson on top of Tecumseh 6-1. Adrian beating Western 2-1. Ipsy Community on top of Pinckney 2-1. And Chelsea shutting out Lincoln 8-0. Head to athletic.net for high school track. Don't have results from meets from yesterday, but there are a few happening today that we'll be keeping an eye on. Jonesville hosting the Cascades Conference Championships today. So all the Cascades teams in action, Addison, Columbia, East Jackson, Grass Lake, Hanover Horton, Homer, Jonesville, Leslie, Manchester, Michigan Center, Napoleon, Vandy, all in today. Now, it looks like 10 o'clock. I'm sorry, 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock for the long jump to start, and then other field events will kind of start shortly after. First running event will be at 3:30 with the 4x800. And then still true to form, the 100-yard dash, then the hurdles, and then the 200. So, yeah, that's it all goes from there. So we'll have results on that for you tomorrow out of the Cascades. J-Prep, the Prep, they're in action tonight. They're going to be in Clinton for the Red Wolves Last Chance invite. And also happening today, according to athletic.net. Oh, it's glitchy. Yeah, well, wait. It's here. The I-8 championships, that has a 2:30 start time for the field events. Harper Creek, Penfield, Coldwater, Hastings, Northwest, Marshall, Western, all in action.
You're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast with your host, Mark Daly.
Back to AM Jackson, live from the County National Bank Studio.
WKHM.com/weather for our forecast this morning, and we have showers and thunderstorms today at 70%. You know what? Let me refresh that, because we already hit the highest percentage chance of rain for the hour for the day today during the 8 o'clock hours. Let me just refresh that. No, it still says 70% chance of rain for today. Cloudy skies, 87 for the high. Showers and thunderstorms tonight, 70%. Overnight low of 52 and partly sunny Wednesday. 64 for the afternoon high on Wednesday. 69 degrees outside right now. That's your weather on News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM. And it's a pleasure. We head to our newsmaker line. Welcome back to the program, State Representative Sarah Leitner. Representative, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. How's it going? Tacos so far on this Tuesday or no?
What's that?
Any tacos so far on this Tuesday or no?
No, tacos.
Not yet.
Probably not today.
Oh, man. What a waste of a Tuesday.
I know, right?
All right. Hey, all right. As I know, we're going to do a deep dive like we always do on stuff that's happening in committee, if anything's going to be happening on the House floor. We're going to get to all that. I promise our listeners we will. But okay. I need to know the secret. I need to know the secret, and I need you to share it with me. What's the secret to limiting out on walleye in the Detroit River?
Well, big old worms, and you just got to have the right jig.
Okay. All right. That's so for our listeners' sake. I don't see you pop up a whole lot on my feed, but I did see, for some reason, I'm just scrolling through and I just see this whole truckload of walleye that you guys bagged over the weekend. So that seemed like a nice little trip out to the Detroit River this weekend.
Yeah, it was a little tough for my kids getting up, considering my son went to prom Saturday night, a second prom.
Oh,
it was his girlfriend's prom.
Yeah.
But I'm like, we have to leave the house no later than 4:45 a.m.
That's so sleeping
we
in.
Drove down to Detroit and out of Sinbad's Marina, and we were on the water about 7-ish, and they were already starting to flay our fish by 8:30. It was a great morning. It was beautiful. I mean, it was super foggy going out.
Yeah,
but it cleared up real fast, and it was just gorgeous, and we just pounded them.
So you're just jigging off the bottom, putting a big old worm on there and just jigging off the bottom, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Simple enough.
They just bit.
Wow. What was the biggest one you guys got that day?
I don't know. We didn't weigh them. They were all pretty decent.
Okay. All right.
Pretty sure I caught the biggest one of the day, though.
See there? you didn't even have to hesitate. Just go right there.
It was very close, but my last one was a big one.
Yeah.
So I'm like, ooh, yeah, those are some nice fillets there.
See, the last time my wife and I went pike fishing, she got the biggest one. I'll happily admit, she got a 36-incher when she was pike fishing. Uh-huh. But all right, so walleye fishing, you guys, that was this past weekend on the Detroit River. That's fun. Now, do you guys do that every year, or what do you? Was it kind of like a spur of the moment thing?
No, I mean, I go every year. Mm-hmm. Sometimes my husband gets to come with me. This was the first year, that mm-hmm. I was able to make room for them as well. Because it was part of another thing, because I'm the Sportsman Caucus co-chair for the legislature.
Yeah.
We actually take other legislators and, teach them about Michigan's great outdoors.
Oh, that's cool.
That might not necessarily do that type of thing.
All right.
And so it's also an educational piece. And, so I work with some groups to get that put on. So it was gorgeous. And then a lot of times my husband and I, we have a buddy who is a boat captain out of Grand Haven.
Uh-huh.
And so we pay for our family to go, salmon fishing or lake trout fishing in the summer too.
Okay.
So,
all right.
But this was their first walleye experience and they loved it.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I laughed because my oldest son actually smiled in the picture, because if you see any other pictures of my son, he can be happy and smiling, but you break out a camera and he goes stone face.
Uh-huh.
So I said it to my mom and my sister, and I'm like, oh my gosh, look, Eli is actually showing teeth. Like,
oh man.
You know, so it was hilarious.
I haven't been walleye fishing in a long, long time, but my uncle used to take us out on Lake Erie. I had another one that would take us out on Lake Huron. We used to smash them as a kid. Loved using Hottentots and Erie Deeries. You haven't used anybody hasn't referenced an Erie Deerie in a long time. But yeah, just killing them on those things out there. But all right. Anyway, wait. What committee was that? You said you're the chair. You're on the outdoor sports recreation.
Oh, it's a fun caucus. It's the Legislative Sportsman Caucus.
Okay, Legislative Sportsman
Caucus.
And
so we have Republican chairs and Democrat chairs, and we actually put on legislative informational breakfasts every couple of months. It depends. It coincides with the NRC meetings.
Gotcha.
So we can get together with groups and have them talk to legislators when we actually have to deal with legislation.
Now, with that said, because we had a lengthy conversation with Tom Knutson last week about some of the, I don't know if they're proposed or if they're actually going into effect this hunting season or next, but the buck limits for deer hunting this year. Are you familiar with that? And is there anything that we can do to kind of get that back to where it really should be? Because it didn't seem like, let me paraphrase this. Tom wasn't too happy with it.
Yeah, which I understand, especially down here, you know, for them to keep the $2 rule up north in the UP and not here seemed counterproductive to me.
Right.
However, I also am an advocate for people shooting more does, because we're in Jackson County. We're one of the highest rates of car deer accidents. Obviously, I'm a farmer as well, so we have crop damage. And I will continue to use, you know, crop damage permits as well. The thing is, I chose to pay for crop damage permits to use during hunting season because, you know, on the farm, it's a tradition. And it's just not the same fun shooting deer in the summer, you know, just because it's free, as it is in the fall. So we actually paid for tags. I mean, obviously, they're heavily discounted. But I know it is a problem, but I also see, like, us growing bigger bucks and being a destination state. You know, maybe we can be like the Ohio's and Wisconsin's and maybe. I don't know. I'm sure I will be down talking to Tom Knutson because I will be going in there anyways just because I like to go there.
Man, yeah, me too. But Every time I'm, yeah, all right. And, well, the other part of that is allowing rifles to be used in southern Michigan, which, again, proponent of people to have the firearms and use them as they see fit. But then again, we're in a populated area down here. I'm not sure if rifles would be the best weapon of choice down here.
You have to be smart. Right. You just have to be smart about it. I mean, you know, we have areas, obviously, we're kind of hilly, and, you know, a lot of times we hunt from elevated stands, so... Yeah, you might shoot across the field 300 yards, but it's down, you know, it's downhill. It's not like we're shooting, like, I'm always cognizant, even with my shotgun, of what's in the background.
Correct.
You know what I mean? And people have to be smart about it, because there's areas over by, you know, Rep Martin was talking about, like, Saginaw, you know, where there's big, huge open fields, and that they can travel for miles. We know that bullets can travel for miles. So people just have to be smart about it. You are,
and I know we have a lot of people listening who are very smart and very responsible about it. But let's be honest, opening day, deer hunting season, especially if it falls on a Saturday, there's a lot of people out in the woods who are not smart about it.
Oh, it's always nuts. It really is.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't fix stupid. I mean, that's the bottom line. Like, okay. Literally, you can't. And, I mean, really, the public land is probably going to be the most contentious. And quite frankly, there's no reason for you to probably even use a rifle, you know, like a 223 or anything on public land, because your shots aren't going to be that far, because a lot of them are so heavily wooded. But... You know, maybe, but you'll hit a lot of trees. But also, the thing is, with the public lands, are you don't know who's out there.
Right.
You don't know where they're at, and some people might just wear an orange hat, which I get it. You want to shield yourself from, you know, the deer and stuff, but you just really have to be smart about it.
Sure.
I like to err on the side of caution. I mean, I wear my orange hat. I also wear a vest because I'm like, I don't want to take any chances. But I also am blessed enough to have my own land that we own, so I don't necessarily have to go to public land at all to go hunt.
Right.
But yeah, people just have to be smart about it. And I mean, let's be real, like with the phase in of the 350s being able to be used down here, you know, that's essentially like a rifle. I mean, they travel a long ways. They shoot great, but they have been allowed as well. So I'm hopeful that our hunting population doesn't make us look silly, like the few, and that we, you know, have a relatively safe opening season, because that does take effect this year. So we'll see.
So the goal is...
There's always an idiot in every village. Yeah. So
the goal is trophy bucks, but we still want to limit the population. So less bucks, more does.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Anything going on in Lansing on the House floor this week?
Yeah, so we talked about it, you know, last week, the drone package. We didn't quite get that finished up,
okay.
So there's multiple bills that are coming up in that. I am having committee tomorrow, and in committee we're going to hear some bills on penalties for work zone deaths. And one of the other ones is like a stationary vehicle, like road commission, tow trucks. That bill is incorporated into the work zone, you know, death or injuries and crime penalties. So we're going to hear testimony on those tomorrow.
Are we looking to increase? Because you see it when you drive by, $7,500 fine, 15 years prison, injure, kill. We're looking to increase those penalties then?
Yes, there's going to be an increase in penalties and then an expansion of the work zone death. Because, like, right now, work zone death only, like, really considered the construction people. Mm-hmm. But we also, as you're aware, we hear a lot of times, even in winter, the tow truck drivers and the tow truck deaths. And so we are incorporating them and road commissions, like just the regular road commission as well. So, like, basically, if you hit a stationary vehicle also, because people are hitting, like, the vehicles or the emergency vehicles or something like that because they're not paying attention. And so increasing penalties on that as well.
Okay. All right. So that testimony happens in your committee this week.
Yep. That'll be tomorrow morning. Okay. So that should be good.
All right. We have anybody from our area going to be coming up to testify in that or no?
Well, those aren't my bills. Those are just bills that I'm hearing in my committee.
Gotcha.
And, you know, so we have a list of people doing that.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
But, yeah, other than that, I'm just hearing, you know, because we're obviously so close to MSU, kind of the MSU shakeup in regards to the board having their secret meeting on Sunday and, raising the president's salary, doubling it basically. So there's a lot of people kind of talking about that right now, and I'm like, oh, funny you should mention that. You know, we have somebody who is actually willing to be transparent and, you know, have those conversations, you know. Mm-hmm. As a trustee for MSU. So that'll be coming, but you know, we have a great friend of agriculture obviously out there.
Yeah.
You know, talking for sure about that too. But that with being so close to our district, you know, we do have to pay attention to that.
That makes no sense, though, because the dude wasn't looking to go to another college. They say he was, but there wasn't any proof of that. From what I understand, maybe you've got a different perspective on it. But you've got departments that all across that university that have been cutting. They've been letting people go. They've been reducing the resources all across that campus. And they give that dude $1 million for no reason. A year. It makes 0.0 sense.
You know, don't get me wrong. President Guskowitz actually is a great dude. But, you know, when you're looking at the perception and you're looking at a publicly elected board meeting in secret and, you know, doing this on a Sunday, you know, as well, like there's something that just doesn't smell right there. And, you know, people need to scrutinize that.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems a little odd, so to speak. Yeah. I've never met the guy. He could be a great dude. You know me, I'm a Michigan fan, but you know, it just doesn't smell. Yeah, like you said, smell right. So, all right. Mm-hmm. Anything else happening in Lansing this week?
Well, I think that's the big thing of it. The drone package is the big deal this week, and then there's a couple other miscellaneous bills, but I'm just not sure I'm there yet, so I don't know if they're actually going to come up for a vote.
Was the revenue estimating conference, was that last week?
It was Friday,
It was Friday?
And, you know, they did anticipate from the prediction of January, they did anticipate about $350 million more than what they anticipated in January.
Okay.
So very, you know, in the grand scheme, though, it's very, very close to January numbers. So.
Okay.
You know, there's continuing to work through that through the budget. And, you know, I got here this morning early and the probe share was already in the office. So they're at it.
Okay.
Hot and heavy for sure.
Yeah. Now, the Detroit Economic Conference in Mackinac City, that's coming up, isn't it? Do you go up to that at all?
Next week.
What's that?
Yes.
That's next week. Yep. Do you go to that at all?
That's next week, so we will not be having session. The Senate will not be having session next week.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Okay.
Because that's, you know, that's a bipartisan thing. They try to have, breakout sessions and good conversations in regards to
you know, things we can accomplish before, obviously, summer and, the rest of this legislative year. So we'll see.
They're up in Mackinac. They go there for the keynotes, and then they kind of break away from the breakout sessions. Come on.
They do break away from the breakout sessions. I'm not even going to lie. It's nuts. And every association and organization is up there. It's crazy. Yeah. It's actually a mess. Like, honestly, I hate having to go, so we're going to go for the least amount of time that we possibly can and do our caucus duties up there and then be gone.
Well, back
in Jackson County.
You could head east a little bit to the Les Chenaux Islands and catch some pike while you're up there.
Probably not.
No.
Graduation is, well, also my son graduates next Friday.
Oh,
so,
yeah, that's right. All right.
That's all coming to a head.
You got any parades that you're heading to this weekend?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I'll be at one, but I just think it's so weird. And I've said this since I've always been in office. Like, it's so weird doing a Memorial Day parade that I choose not to, like, be in it as an elected.
Gotcha.
One, because I didn't serve our country. You know what I mean? And I know it's not all about that, but, like, it mainly is, and I just feel it's a little disrespectful. No offense to some of you others that do it, but I just don't see it as being the right place.
Gotcha. All right. I completely understand and appreciate that. Mm-hmm. So, all right. All right. Well, Representative Sarah Leitner, anything else? We got it all?
I think we got it all for now, anyway.
All right. Well, thank you for the time today. Glad you had a good time out on the Detroit River. And so I kind of take it that we'll be off next week since there's not committee. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, that's probably safe to say. I'll probably be traveling. Tuesday I will be traveling to Mackinac.
All right. Well, you have safe travels, and then we'll talk to you in a couple weeks. We'll talk to you after the Mackinac conference, and we'll get the results then. So, all right, we'll talk with you then. Have safe travels. Have a great Memorial weekend.
You too. Thanks. All right.
Representative Sarah Leitner joining us on AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM 101.5 FM.
I'm Mark Daly, and you're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast.
And just like that, it's 9:36 on a Tuesday. And that can only mean one thing. It's time for the County National Bank Show, live from the County National Bank Studio. And we welcome back to the program Barry Malik, your host here for the second half of May. Barry, good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
How you doing?
Awesome. Better than I deserve.
There you go. Yeah.
You know who says that?
That would be a Dave Ramsey.
Yeah.
Which you can catch Dave Ramsey here.
That's right.
Every weekday evening. Is 6 o'clock considered evening?
Yeah, I guess so.
Or is that late afternoon?
No, I guess that's evening.
That's the
beginning of evening.
Well past bedtime for me.
Oh, yeah. When you got to get up at 2 a.m.
Pretty early. Not quite that early, but pretty early. So, yeah.
Well, good to see you.
Good to have you here, Barry.
End of the month. So, I've got this week and next week. And
the countdown is on.
Yeah.
Do we take that golfing break for the summer?
Well, yesterday was... we always talk about community events. Yesterday was the big chamber golf outing.
Did you get all 18 in?
I did not. Okay. You know what? We, the CNB, always has a team or two, but I'm not the scratch golfer. We've got some really good golfers, so I let them put together the team. But definitely it's something that's worth supporting.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was just talking with the crew. We had a team out there yesterday.
Okay. It was beautiful weather until the sky opened up.
Up until it rained. Yeah. It was a great day. Chamber of Commerce Day.
Yeah.
Ish.
So Community Impact Day was also last weekend.
So, yeah.
Saturday, there was a great turnout for that. I heard they had over 100 volunteers.
Oh, nice.
So, and in the survey information, 100% said that they would recommend this event to others. So it was very well received.
Good.
And then Ellis Sharp Art Beer and Wine is coming up, and that's on the 6th. And
fancy
we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes here on the show because we have a guest.
Special guest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And we have a few events coming up that are related to the legislative breakfast on June 5th at the Otterbein Senior Living.
Otterbein.
Otterbein. Mm-hmm. 7:30 a.m. to 9 a.m. So that's a good way to hear from our local state legislators, ask questions, get information. And then Wake Up Jackson is on June 11th. That's 7:30 a.m. to 9 a.m. at 49 South. And then Destination Uplift webinar is coming up with a Pure Michigan presentation on June 25th, 11 a.m. So some good stuff coming up.
Yeah, a lot of fun stuff going on.
Yeah. Right. So what's on your mind?
Well, you know, at this point, there's not.
Okay.
There's not. I have County National Bank show on my mind, Barry.
You just seem preoccupied, so I was just wondering.
Do
you,
I?
Yeah.
Just making sure everything times out.
Okay. All right.
That's what Mark's doing.
Well, everything's timing out well.
For sure. All right.
Want to go over a few economic numbers quickly here, and if I can get my phone back open. So as of Friday, last week was down a little bit in most of the market, except for the S&P 500, which was up 0.17%. But year to date, the Dow is up 3.63%. The S&P is up year to date 8.68%, and the NASDAQ is up 13.08%. Big winner for the year has been the Emerging Market Index, and that's up 19.61%. Looking on the bond side of things, just total return is slightly down at 0.71% on the aggregate bond index, and interest rates holding steady. Gold down last week 3.57%, but still year to date a positive 5.09%, and the Bitcoin is still negative last week and year to date down 9.51%. If we look at investment management styles, year-to-date, the big winner is the small-cap value, up 14.1%. And the lowest return is the large-cap growth, which was only up 5.3%. Actually, the mid-cap was in the negative. It was the only one that was in the negative, down 0.46%. So some good information there on the markets. And then we're awaiting earnings outcomes for some major companies. It's earnings season. You know, we start getting mixed messages when it comes to economic data, unemployment, and inflation. But nothing that's shocking the markets. The big thing right now is what's going on geopolitically in the Straits and in Iran. So overall, the markets are doing very well in light of that uncertainty. Mm-hmm. But the sooner we get through that, the better.
Right. I feel like there's going to be a resolution to that.
I do too.
That's just what I have no insight. Just feels like what my gut's telling me.
Follow your gut.
All right. There you go.
So I want to jump right in here to talking with our guest. And, you know, CNB has been a sponsor of Art, Beer, and Wine for a number of years now. And we really love the organization, the Ella Sharp Museum, and that event. So it's a great community event. And we've seen the numbers, the participation of people coming out to it. Just increasing through the years. So looking forward to this year's coming up on Saturday, June 6th. And I have here with me a special guest. It's Karina Hirschberger. And Karina is a communications coordinator for Ella Sharp Museum. Right. And Karina, we're excited and happy to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm very excited.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
So you've been with the Ella Sharp Museum probably going on about 6 months now.
Uh-huh. Yep. Started in January 21st, I think. So. Yep.
Okay. And how's your experience been so far?
It's really great. I love working in a museum, and not to mention Ella Sharp Museum. So it's really great. Really love the team and my position. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's a great asset for our community.
Oh, for sure.
It is. So let's talk a little bit about the festival coming up. What's on? What is the big excitement this year? Anything different? Anything new?
So other than me being there, obviously, which is really exciting, we're gonna have kid zones. So we're kind of going for a more family friendly feel to kind of bring more of the community in. So we're gonna have kid zones all around the campus. I think the right number is coming to my head, it's going to be around maybe 10, but those kid zones are run by nonprofits and other like kid-related companies. So those should be really fun and really cool, and we're going to have lots of great stuff for the kids and families, too.
Any bouncy houses or anything?
Ooh, I don't know if we have bouncy houses. I'm not sure. I might have to get back to you on that.
Kid zones, though. Are they going to be in different areas?
Yes, so they're kind of different. They're themed differently based on the organization that is running them. So I think we're going to have the Dahlem Center out there, so that one is going to be, you know, nature-inspired probably, so that'll be really fun.
Yeah, it kind of lends itself to what the event is, because I've been to other beer fests, and I don't want to say they ever get out of hand. They don't, but there's quite a bit of consumption that goes on. I've been to this one a few times, and you don't see that, and it does kind of feel like this is really an all-encompassing type of event for the community.
Yeah, I feel like it's a really great experience all around, because you have the art and the drinking, and then also like the community aspect, because I don't know, Ella Sharp kind of has the ability to bring together the Jackson community in a really special way. So
it does. Yeah. So it's a very cool location.
Yeah, it's wonderful to get out, and you see so many people. The nice thing about it is you can connect with people maybe you haven't seen in a while because the attendance is so great. You're running into people all the time that you know.
Yeah, that's one of the first. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, you're good. I was just going to say, you were talking about the attendance rates. I think last year we had about 3,000 people, maybe over that. So we're anticipating a really good show out this year.
And we're drawing in people from other areas, too, which is nice.
Yeah, I've looked a bit at the statistics of that, and it's very interesting. There are a couple from other countries, and I'm like, this is so random and so cool.
Yeah. That is pretty cool. All right.
I don't know if they came just for our beer and wine, but you know, they were there.
Either way, they're there. And it's one of the first events, really, of the summer, too. It's the first opportunity to get out.
Summer starts there. Yeah.
There you go.
That's our slogan. Summer starts here.
That's a great slogan. Well, you know, it's exciting because, you know, this is just one of the many events and wonderful things we have, amenities in this community. And, you know, I also want to mention, to remind people, we've got the Build in Jackson, the wonderful home incentive for people buying their home. So you can get the $40,000 to $60,000 down payment. And some of the people I hear that are applying for that are from other areas like Mason and Howell and Clarkston. So it's these type of things, though, that make Jackson a wonderful community to live in, the things that you can have throughout the year, like the Art, Beer, and Wine Festival.
So what's when this event, obviously the beverages that are going to be served, the beer, the wine, that's, you know, that's the namesake of the event. We talked about the game, but what's the big attraction? What's this event that stands out for you that you really feel is an asset to it?
Ooh, that's a tough question.
Any special bands this year?
We're going to have some really great live music. It's going to be really cool. We have, I think, a couple stages around. I think we're going to have an outdoor gallery, kind of. We're going to get some art and maybe some history and put it. I think if I'm not remembering correctly, it might be on the patio, could be somewhere else, but stay tuned for that. But I think that's going to be really unique because you don't really get to do outside galleries other than our sculptures and our out buildings. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know if there's really one huge thing that I'm super excited about. I am a person who appreciates a lot of small things and how they come together to create a really wonderful experience.
That's a great answer. Yeah. Do you see that people, or do you feel like people, there's going to be a little bit of overflow into the museum? I know the it's confined to outside. Yeah. They can't take their beverages outside of the area, but do you feel like the museum's going to get a little bit of overflow from the event?
Yeah, I feel like it will. It'll also be a good place to go and cool down. It's going to be nice and warm. I think it's going to be a great day. We're highly encouraging people to go into the museum, check out the galleries. We've got lots of great. We've got Jackson sporting history in there, Made in Jackson.
Oh, that's a cool one.
Yes, it's very cool.
Yeah. How do people get their tickets?
So people can get tickets on our website at ellasharpmuseum.org. You can go to our event page and then just click on 21st Annual Art, Beer, and Wine, and then you can buy your tickets there.
It's the 21st year.
Yes.
That's appropriate.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
Are we anticipating this selling out? Should they get their tickets ahead of time? Will it sell out?
You know, I don't know if we have a sellout because we just want to have as many people as possible.
All right.
But tickets do go up in price if you buy them the day of. So buy them before, buy them beforehand, probably now. I think they go up in increments of 5. So the night before, they're a little more expensive, and then the day of, they're even more expensive.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So and get them now.
If someone doesn't want to drink alcohol, you still have the music, you have the art, and there's a special pass you can get that's a little less expensive without the drink passes.
Yeah. So right now, that one's only $20.
Okay.
So, yeah. It's our designated driver pass.
Food? We have food there?
Yes, we're going to have food trucks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be lots of great food. We've got to keep the people fed.
Yeah, you can't have them consuming on an empty stomach.
No. Mm-hmm. You know, in addition to beer, wine, and art, it's with the music and the food, it just creates an all-around great event. And now that you have the kids' zones, it really makes it easy and conducive for people with littles.
Yeah. Also, I want to put this little plug in there. We are looking for volunteers.
Yes. Sure.
So we would love people to sign up to volunteer. There's lots of really great perks that you can get if you volunteer. So we're doing an after party at Ogma after, which is going to be really exciting.
And the event runs from 2 to 6, is it?
Yes, it's 2 to 6. Okay. And then you can also buy an early admission add-on, or you can get the VIP ticket.
Okay.
Which that'll be, you can come in at 1. So,
so 2 to 6 early. And then an afterglow at Ogma for the volunteers.
Yeah. Right. So volunteers also, I'm just going to read off the volunteer perks because I think this is really great. I'm going to try to get all of my friends to volunteer. So you get a free 1-year membership to the museum, a free festival admission, a food truck voucher, volunteer swag. You can choose your assignment. And then you can also do the after party at Ogma. So that'll be really cool.
Great incentive.
Do you see Ella has like a good core of volunteers that kind of come for a lot of their different things?
Yeah, we have a really loyal volunteer base. So we love them for that. But we are always looking for more people because we want to spread the word.
Well, all right. So in that, kind of leaning into that, how do people learn about the volunteer opportunities they have there?
Yeah, so you can visit our website. Occasionally we're posting on social media about volunteerism. You can reach out to our curator of education, Natasha Levitt. She is really great at getting people connected to kind of like fitting them with the right volunteer job. So, yeah.
Okay,
but the website, you can access
our website.
Volunteer opportunities.
Interest sign up on our website.
And just an idea of what some of the volunteer opportunities are.
Yeah, so other than our events, so last week we had Free Museum Day. So we had several, lots of volunteers for that, and we have our docents, which are volunteers. So if you want to learn all about Ella Sharp and the history and dress up in the period piece garments, then you can volunteer and become a docent. You can volunteer to lead tours in our outbuildings. you can also just, we're a museum, so we got lots of spinning wheels and always have need for help around. So yeah, I mean, just generally, we love our volunteers.
One of the nice things I know some volunteers talk about, and I've gotten to see it too, but often the volunteers will get to see the basement. That is like a whole museum in itself. I mean, there's so many unique things.
It's very cool. I don't know if you guys were keeping up with our Jackson Gibbs Day, but we did a little bit of a sneak peek down in the basement. Which was really cool. It's posted on our Facebook if you guys want to go check it out. But we also do archive tours for members, I think. So if you become a member, get an archive.
And I'm assuming website's where you go for membership information also.
It is.
Just, taking a stab at that.
All roads lead to the website.
All right.
Cool. How are we doing on time, Mark?
Right, we got a couple minutes yet, Barry.
All right. Mm-hmm. So if we look at where your membership is now, I think you said you get about 65% of the positions filled, or not members, yeah, volunteers. Yes.
I think so, yeah. And our numbers
so there's still
are
room to volunteer.
There is, yes.
But if you want to get into the wonderful incentives, I would tell people to act now because those are probably going to fill up quick.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's a great opportunity. Very unique.
Our Beer and Wine Festival. What are some of the other events coming up with Yellow throughout the year?
Yeah, so throughout the year, or well, specifically throughout the summer, we have our patio parties. So our first one is June 18th.
Okay.
I think that's from 4 to 7.
Mm-hmm.
So that one's very exciting.
Yeah, live music out on the patio,
yes,
right?
Yes, live music out on the patio, just general great vibes. So it's going to be really fun.
Love good vibe places, man. I really do. Yeah.
Yeah. And all then right. I think our next one is in July. So keep an eye out for that one.
And there's a lot of events that get planned in the community room there.
Yep.
A great facility for for an event.
Yeah, I love, sometimes I don't do as well of a job of keeping up with what events are going on, so sometimes I'll pull into work and there's a ton of cars in the driveway, so it's a surprise, and I'm like, ooh, people are here.
Are you ever, who's in my parking spot?
I know, that's what happens.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
All right.
Art, Beer, and Wine Festival this weekend. Yep. Give us the details, what our listeners need to know about it, Corinna.
Yeah, so buy tickets now at ellisharpmuseum.org or volunteer. Like we said, the volunteer spots are filling up, and so are the tickets. So, you know, I mean, I think it's a great incentive to buy tickets early because, you know,
for sure.
It's kind of like a discount. It's girl math, so it's cheaper. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here we go.
It's more coins you can get.
Yeah.
Do you get a certain number of coins with your ticket?
Yes. I think you get 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, of course, additional coins
available you can, there. Yes, at all of our Ella tables.
And a special commemorative tasting glass.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Very good. I got a collection of them at home.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. The wooden nickels, I call them.
Yeah.
Saturday, June 6th, 2 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to really thank you for coming out. It was on short notice, Corinna, and just appreciate you coming out and talking to us about this wonderful event. And County National Bank is always proud to be a part of Art, Beer, and Wine Festival. Before we sign off, I want to remind people a little bit on the financial side. If you're a business owner, an employer, think about the incentives if you don't have a retirement plan for your employees. The way to attract and retain good employees is to have some kind of a plan, like a simple 401k, 403b. Mm-hmm. And with that, under the Secure Act, there's some great incentives. You can get up to $5,000 in tax credits to help offset the cost of setting that up. And then also with Secure 2.0, there's the new incentive that helps offset contributions to your employees, the money you put into the plan. First year, $1,000, and then 75% of that the second year, 50%, and then down from there. But we're going to wrap it up here. So if people want to get a hold of the Yellow Sharp Museum, do you have the phone number with you?
All roads lead to the website.
And then I'm going to give you my number if you need to get a hold of me, 517-768-0043.
All right. Thanks a lot. Barry, Corinna, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thank you.
AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM.
This has been the AM Jackson Podcast. Tune in live weekday mornings from 6 until 10 at News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM, and online at WKHM.com.